Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Chrissy Pease joining me in our downtown Milwaukee studios. This is our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I know that you count on WPR's Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you. You count on us for the conversation about what's going on in our state. We had a wonderful response last hour of the program. We wanted 55 contributors, and we had 75. That's just wonderful. Thank you so much. But here we go again, and we are counting on you to keep those discussions and the discussions you're about to hear on the air. Make a gift of any amount right now and help us pay for the programs you depend on. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hello, Chrissy.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you to everyone who helped us absolutely exceed our goal last hour. And we have another one this hour, and we need to get 55 pledges. Please help us meet this important goal by making a contribution now. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift ensures that the programs you enjoy, like this one, Kathleen Dunn Show, will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Contribute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be speaking with a veterinarian, Nicholas Dodson, author of, I love the title of the book, Good Old Dog. Would you say, you good old dog. Expert advice for keeping your aging dog happy, healthy, and comfortable. And discussions like these on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs, and as an added incentive for your good deed, we have something special for you.
You good old person, you. You can receive Good Old Dog, expert advice for keeping your aging dog happy, healthy, and comfortable when you donate $150 or more. It's a special book. I've been reading it and crying with my dog on my lap while I read it. Give now any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and ask for Good Old Dog by the Tufts Veterinary School as your thank you gift when you give $150.
We try to be as timely as possible on this show when choosing topics and guests. And obviously the big story of the past few weeks has been the budget repair bill. And this past few weeks, we've had Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, Democratic State Senator Lena Taylor, Republican State Senator Randy Hopper, WPR's sleep-deprived but fantastic
he's done a great job.
Capitol reporter Sean Johnson. You've heard him on NPR reporting from Madison. Many others. Maybe that's why this show has attracted so many loyal listeners, and we heard from so many of you last hour, because you want to hear in-depth discussions that go beyond the daily headlines. And it's all made possible by listener contributions. To make your contribution, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time.
A dollar or two a week adds up to about $50 or $100 for the year. And all year long, you'll benefit from this program and all of the WPR programs you love. Make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And give as generously as you can, please.
Our goal, 55 callers. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Donate now, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much, and thank you, Chrissy. We're going to be talking about our old dogs this hour of the program, and I know that many of us have dogs, and when we trained them when they were puppies, and now they're getting a little bit older, and it happens. Our guest says the very idea of a dog's old age is relatively new. It wasn't, of course, too many generations ago that dogs were still viewed largely as utilitarian workers, and the notion of having a dog at a comfortable, happy old age would never even have been considered. But now our dogs are older. And, of course, a bond gets strengthened after one's four-legged friend has turned 7, 10, 11, 12 years old. Perhaps this is the part that really got to me. When I read this, my dog was on my lap, and I thought, yeah, this is true. All your boys are gone, Murphy. Perhaps you and your older dog have watched children go off to college together, grieved a loss, relocated or dealt with a career change, taken walks by each other's side, watched favorite television shows, and greeted each other enthusiastically. There's nothing like this greeting after a long day apart, and been a reassuring presence to each other at bedtime. Joining us this hour of the program is Dr. Nicholas Dodman, professor and section head and program director of the Animal Behavior Department of Clinical Sciences at Tufts University and the editor of Good Old Dog. We're going to be entertaining questions about your good old dogs and talk about how dogs are, it's really a cutting edge in veterinary medicine right now, so dogs can live healthier lives and longer lives as well, which is good for us because I think their lives are too short. Dr. Nicholas Dodman, thank you so much for being with us. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. I loved reading the book, and I did read it with my getting older dog, and then I saw my son at college this weekend, and I was talking about your book and our dog Murphy, who's getting older, and he said, Mom, Murphy's not old yet. And I'm thinking, well, you know, he's seven. He's getting up there. But you also have a guide for how dogs can live to be pretty darned healthy at what we think are fairly advanced ages, right?
Right. So some dogs might be hitting their senior years at seven. And typically that's the, you know, the giant breeds, very large dogs like the St. Bernard and even a Great Dane or so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversion figure from dog years to humans is probably 8 to 1 for those dogs. So when you're 7, 8 to 56, yeah, you're pushing 60 in human years, even at the age of 7. But if you have a little dog, like Jack Russell Terrier, the conversion figure is more like 6 to 1. So when he's 7 years old, 6 times 7 is 42.
Mm.
So he's in the prime of life. And my wife just showed me something the other day. It said for people, they defined young ages from here to here. Middle age stops at 54. And after 54, you are old.
Hmm.
And she said, look, that means you're old. I said, hey, get away.
You're absolutely right.
So it really does depend, especially with dogs. And some dogs will live to be ripe old ages. In the book, yeah, we see like 8,000 older dogs each year.
Wow.
As defined by, you know, having 75% of their anticipated lifespan is now gone. They're like basically in the last quarter of life. And we see 8,000 per year. We went back and checked a few years back in the records, and the oldest one we had on file was 21. But I know that's not a record, you know, and people often tell me about dogs that are 22 and 23. I think the Guinness Book of Records is probably even more than that. But one person did call me up and said we didn't know what we're talking about, that he knew an Afghan that lived to be 30-something. But
oh, my gosh.
I find that hard to believe, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Why is it that smaller dogs live longer than big dogs?
Well, genetics is one of the reasons, probably the main reason, because it's the genetics of longevity, but also the genetics of being smaller. So when you have a smaller frame, you know, your body has less work to do to carry that frame around. I mean, you think about it, you don't see very many centenarian human beings who weigh 300 pounds.
That's true.
I mean, so if you're light and trim, you know, most of the people who make it in humans to be good ripe old age, they're like birds, you know, they're pretty skinny, lean people, sometimes very small stature, so there seems to be an advantage in having less weight to haul around.
Mm-hmm. And that's a part of the book, too, because dogs tend to gain a little bit of weight. We do, you know, unfortunately, and we've had to make a radical change in our dog's diet because, quite frankly, he was getting pudgy, and it wasn't very good for his health, so he's changed his diet. But we have this tendency to treat them, we want to treat them. So we give them little table scraps and we give them cookies. And before you know it, the dog's got an extra 10 pounds. And how does that harm a dog?
Well, just about every way that you could imagine. You know, longevity. I mean, the most important determining factor as to how long you live is the number of calories that cross your throat. That's been known since the turn of last century, studies in mice, but people still don't get the point. It's basically the more you eat, the less long you live, and the more Spartan your diet, the longer you live. But if you are carrying that extra weight, so not only won't you live as long, but you're more likely to get heart problems, diabetes, you know, arthritis, and all the things that plague human beings.
And why do we do that with our dogs?
I think it's a misguided sense of kindness and an inability to say no. Of course, the pet food companies are working to sell pet food, and we kind dog owners, we like to buy things our dogs like. So there's almost a palatability wars going on, and they're designing things behind the scenes, the short-term palatability and the long-term palatability for the retained customer. And they design all this. I mean, it's no good having a diet that a dog comes along, looks at, woofs it down once, and the next meal he doesn't like it. So there's a science into making these foods attractive. So there they are. They're attractive. We put them down. The dog scoffs them and looks up, and we give him some more. Then we throw in some table scraps because he looks with big baleful eyes at the table. Then we give him
right.
dog treats.
Yes, yes.
And there's a table in the book with dog treats. I mean, some of them are like 700 calories apiece. I mean, and all in all, we overdo it. And something like 50% of the nation's, you know, 170-odd million pets, dogs and cats, are overweight to the point of being a problem, and many of them are actually obese.
And I must say, just to for people who are listening, my dog has now lost 5 pounds in about 2 months, so it can be done.
Well, did you do a diet on purpose?
Yes, he tore one of his ligaments, and he's a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, and he keeps in, they have a lot of enthusiasm. Instead of going down the stairs, he leaps off the stairs because
yeah.
he's so excited to be with us, and I think that repetitive motion, plus an extra 10 pounds, I hate to admit it.
That's it.
And so he had to have laser therapy, which was amazing. He had laser therapy, and he's doing much, much better. But, you know, I felt badly. I contributed in some ways to this because I let him get 10 pounds overweight.
That's exactly right. I'm sorry to say, but, you know, the extra weight does lead to various orthopedic problems. It puts a stress on
right.
various joints. And, you know, arthritis is just as prevalent in dogs as it is in people. It tends to be a different type of arthritis. Not so much of the rheumatoid, although that does occur, mainly a kind that starts with a joint that doesn't fit properly, and over the years of this joint sort of, you know, the ball of a ball and socket sort of clunking around in a far too shallow opposite side of the joint, and clink, clunk, clink, clunk, it gets all kind of corroded, and then with extra weight, it's even worse, and lo and behold, you've got, say, hip arthritis or elbow arthritis or shoulder arthritis. Different in people. People, it's a wear and tear lesion. In dogs, it's usually starts with some issue they have when they're born that it puts them on a course for arthritis later on.
Yeah. Let's go back to food for a moment. We've also heard radically different advice. Well, your dog should be on the same kind of food that people eat. Make them, you know, skip the dog food, commercial dog food. No, you need to get it from the veterinarian. You should just give carrots for treats. You should give... It's all over the place, as it is for human beings. Is there something that we should all accept as the guideline for feeding our dogs?
Yes, there are guidelines... that are put down, recommendations by a group called AFCO, A-A-F-C-O. And on the side of every bag, in the statement of nutritional adequacy, which is often scrunched up in the far corner, is the most important part of the bag. It's got the list of ingredients in there. If it says this food has been designed according to AFCO standards, AFCO stands for something like the American Association of Food Council Officials or something of that nature. But these guys have sat down and they've planned exactly what constitutes, say, a puppy food for growth. And if it's designed along those lines, it will be adequate. And ditto for the adult dog. Even better if it says on the label, and not only has it been designed according to these standards, but it's actually been used in feeding trials and found to be appropriate for the job that it's intended. And no, dog food is not the same as human food, and dogs don't do well on human food. So they've designed it for a dog. It works. You can read it on the side of the bag. But we mentioned in the book that there's a problem when it comes to senior food because there is really no definition of senior food. The AFCO hasn't held forth about what constitutes a senior diet. So basically, if you see senior on the side of the label, it means whatever that manufacturer wants it to mean. And really, it's more of a marketing tool. You know, they want to appeal to these people, these older dogs. You know, do the best for your dog. He's now 10 years old. You better feed him a senior ration and he'll do better.
Right.
And they don't always do better because some of these foods contain fewer calories than you would normally feed, and your dog loses weight. You take him to the vet, you think he's ill, you do it to him, you fed him the wrong diet. Or the other can be true, too. So instead of 400 calories a cup, which is the normal calorie content of dog food, it's 500 calories a cup. You switch his diet because he's senior, and so all of a sudden he's overweight, and then he gets, you know, an exacerbation of his arthritis.
Hmm.
So, if you're going to change your diet, first of all, A, don't change it on spec, and B, probably change it only when you have to, when there's some sort of indication, and then in cooperation with, you know, with input from your veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. And do you have to follow, as human beings do, that you need to take in so many calories if you don't? Do you do the exercise calorie thing with older dogs? That you, it should be two cups, 800 calories? I mean, how do you judge that, or should you judge that?
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, as a dog owner, you will have been feeding a certain food all your life, and preferably one of these ones that's AFCO approved or used in feeding trials, and your dog hits 10, there's no reason to do anything. I mean, You're feeding him the right amount for him, which varies according to dog, as it does with people. And the amount of food you can eat and stay the same weight varies. I mean, if in the middle of life you found that you were feeding, you know, your dog was getting fat, you're feeding too much. You know, so cut it down by, depending on the size of the dog, half a cup a day or something, and then do that for a while. Is he staying the same weight? Is he remaining overweight? If he is, cut it down another half cup and so on. Or if he's losing weight, you can feed him more, and you've got this stable diet. And then you hit 10 years old. There's no reason to do anything. Nothing at all. Don't buy a senior diet. Just leave him on the same old food.
Mm-hmm.
Change flavors if you wish. If you're worried about him eating the same old flavor every day, I mean, I think that's probably boring. You know, I wouldn't want to do that.
No, I wouldn't either. Let's welcome phone calls. Our guest is Dr. Nicholas Dodman. He's a veterinarian and a professor and section head and program director of Animal Behavior Department of Clinical Sciences at Tufts University, where they see, this is amazing, 8,000 old dogs. That is their yearly caseload at the clinic, and it has an entire group of board-certified veterinary specialists whose entire aim, really, is to further the good years of pets' lives. And so we're welcoming phone calls. It covers the book, all kinds of issues. Old is not a disease, how to make sure you're choosing the right diet, five common medical conditions of older dogs, protecting joints, fighting canine cancer, heart disease, when the kidneys start giving out, the price of aging gracefully, changing the environment to suit the dog, emergency, rather urgent, or non-emergency, and end-of-life decisions. So we welcome your calls on any of those areas for our veterinarian. And we also want to tell you, this is really a valuable book for those, and we're all going to have, if we have dogs, if we're blessed, we'll have older dogs as well. So it gives valuable medical information, and we're in a pledge drive. So I also want to tell you that it's a premium, $150 pledge. We'll happily send you a copy of Good Old Dog, Expert Advice for Keeping Your Aging Dog Happy, Healthy, and Comfortable. To your phone calls momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls for Dr. Nicholas Dodman, and let us start with Susan from Oregon. Hi, Susan.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a lot of questions, and I'll try to get them concise, but I'm concerned about when I read dog food labels, all the additives, preservatives, and I'm wondering about the merits of giving some natural foods to dogs as a supplement to dog food, for instance, raw meats or brown rice, and I'm concerned about all the grains that are used in the prepared foods because I don't know if a dog is supposed to be a carnivore or an omnivore, and I'm wondering about the raw food diets. So those are a lot of different issues.
All right, Susan.
Well, the first thing is that this is dealt with, more than adequately in the book by the person who was the information source for this chapter was Dr. Lisa Freeman, who is our nutritionist. She has a doctor of veterinary medicine degree, a PhD in nutrition, and is board certified nutritionist. She's a full professor. This is what she does. She knows more about formulating pet foods and pet food companies and and actually does give them advice. So in it, she deals with a number of those things. And, you know, a lot of people worry about, say, these funny chemical names that you see on the side of the bag. And some of them, which then we go through them kind of one by one in the book, are not important at all. I mean, there are things that, as you say, pyridoxin. You say, ooh, don't like the sound of that. Sounds like a chemical. It's a vitamin. You know, it's a vitamin B. So that's got to be in there. And lots of other things. Pantothenic acid. Ooh, acid. You know, another B vitamin. So it goes through one by one, all these things that you think are these sinister things in the diet, and basically lays it to rest that they're really not an issue. I mean, they're not putting in, you know, plutonium or anything like that. As far as raw food's concerned, she is, I know this is highly contentious, but she is absolutely, completely opposed to raw food diets. And she backs it up by saying, for example, in answer to your question, dogs are not omnivores, are not carnivores, they're omnivores. That's a scientific fact. So they're designed to eat a bunch of stuff with vegetables and meat. And actually the raw food, you know, people say, well, don't they lived on that in the wild? Yeah, but their lifespan in the wild was like 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
Eating the right food, they can live to be a ripe old age with all of the tweaks and things the pet food companies give it. Also, raw food, we've tested them here at the hospital. There's been some ones that people have made themselves and some that we've done store-bought, and we've tested them. There's a very high percentage of bacteria in the raw foods. I mean, if you don't believe me, don't do this, but go and buy raw chicken and or undercook it on the grill and start eating it.
Oh, it makes you sick.
Be ill.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have raw food in a restaurant, like you have a beef carpaccio or beef tartare, that is carefully prepared like sushi, and it's cut out of the middle. If you just take a chunk of meat and you go chew on it, you're going to get infection. So, and then there's a myth about the dogs have a stronger GI tract because they're scavengers and they've got stronger gastric acid. No, they don't. That's another one of these myths. So I think you'll find she buries it all, and the word natural, it's just a current sort of buzz that everybody wants it to be, quotes, natural, and, you know, people are coming down against grains, and, I mean, there's really not very much good information. If you chase back one of those rumors, you'll probably find it came from, you know, Mary Doyle, dog breeder in Michigan.
Right.
You know, where did she go to nutrition school?
Exactly.
She says, I always feed my dogs such and such, and they do well. I mean, it reminds me of a joke where a pig farmer told his friend, he said, you know, my pig's sick. And the other guy said, well, I fed mine turpentine. He said, I'll try that. And then the next day he says, my pig died. And the other guy says, yeah, so did mine.
Oh, that's like, terrible.
They're all out there. Nobody knows anything, and everyone's giving each other advice. But this is the bee's knees. This is the advice from the top of the mountain. I mean, it's factually supported. There's published work. This is how you do best for your dog. And I know it's contentious. We had a meeting the other day, a book signing down in Wellesley, Mass. And one of the people in the audience said, I like to feed my dog more natural / raw food. And Dr. Freeman came out and actually said herself what I've kind of paraphrased. And the person just stood up and walked out of the meeting.
Oh, my goodness.
Just left. And they got very angry. They want to feed raw food, and they don't want to be confused with the facts.
Right. That's a problem in our society sometimes. Don't give us the facts, ma'am. No facts. I was also interested, and I found the food thing chapter very valuable. It's also filled with really interesting information that dogs have. I can't remember the number. Is it about 2,000 taste buds, and we have 9,000 taste buds?
Considerably less than us. Those numbers sound, I think, the ratio is approximately right, that they don't do very well in the taste department. And when you think about it, taste is a pretty shabby sense anyway. I mean, you don't do much with taste. It does salt and sweet and bitter and a few things like that. But really, your food really is captured in your nose. It's the aroma. As you know, any of us out there, if we get a cold, you don't taste your food.
Mm-hmm.
You can taste salt. You can probably taste vinegar and sour and things like that. But you can't really appreciate, you know, a hamburger or whatever.
Right.
So it's the sense of smell. So in that sense, dogs must really, you know, taste things much better than us, because even though they've got very few taste buds on their tongue, they've got, you know, sometimes, you know, I've heard figures as high as 1 billion, even 4 billion smell receptors versus our 12 million. So they can smell like 3 molecules of certain substances kind of in a northeast breeze in a, you know, 3 parts per trillion.
12 billion?
That's 12 million for us and 1 to 4 billion
one
for
to
a dog.
Four.
I've heard lower estimates too, but you know, it's certainly it's orders of magnitude different. I mean, 20, 30, 40, 50 times more than us.
That is astounding. That is the fact for the day. Holy Toledo. Wow. All right. More phone calls in a moment. Just stay on hold, if you would, because we're in an important Wisconsin Public Radio winter membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Joining me in our Milwaukee studio is Chrissy Pease, one of the wonderful producers of this show. Rhonda Fanning is out sick today, and we hope she'll be with us again tomorrow. She's the other wonderful producer of this program. Listener donations, of course, the foundation of our budget, and it's why we are asking for your gift right now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are looking to get 41 more pledges in the next 30 minutes or so. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We get such good guests on WPR because we have great producers, and they know that you will ask great questions, and you won't be the guests interrupted by commercials either. Your support makes this possible. You really are the most important part of our budget, and you are a very, very important part of our programming. Thanks in advance for making your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make that pledge, you can receive Good Old Dog, this book we're talking about, expert advice for keeping your aging dog happy, healthy, and comfortable. It's a thank you gift for your pledge of $150 or more. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you'll enjoy this item. That's Good Old Dog by the faculty of the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University for your pledge of $150. But your pledge of any amount supports Wisconsin Public Radio programs. WPR.org, please, or 888-202-2552.
You, of course, care about state, regional, and world events. I'm a big-time dog lover, as you know. You care about dogs and cats and animals and... well, you care about so many issues. You get all that information and also commentary and suggested reading.
You get news and information, but also programs that clear your mind and entertain you, like this one. Support all the programs you value. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Please donate now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. For all of you dog lovers, this is a valuable resource. Good Old Dog, a pledge of $150, and you will get information that will carry you and your dog into his or her older years. Or if you're already there, help you with your dog in his or her older years right now. Our guest this hour is Dr. Nicholas Dodman. He's a veterinarian, and he is program director of the Animal Behavior Department of Clinical Sciences at Tufts University, editor of the book we have been talking about, Good Old Dog. And we go to Paul in Duluth next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Paul.
And hello to your guest. I think I may have recommended the program on one of your call-in days a while back.
Oh,
I have a chow that just turned 17.
Oh my goodness!
On I got her from a shelter, and I describe her as my prescription dog because I had been diagnosed with depression, and I was becoming more introverted. And my doctor at the time said, Paul, if I could prescribe a dog for you, I would.
Aww.
And she's been with me ever since. Now, she seems to be in relatively good health overall. She's got a little arthritis, but I think what I'm seeing is signs of dementia. You know, she'll like stare at a wall and not move, and sometimes when I'm out with her, I don't think she's going deaf or blind, but she just doesn't respond to me the way she always has.
Mm.
My theory has always been that, you know, it's not about me, it's about her.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, when do you decide that it's time to put her down? And
not at this time.
Not at this time, you said.
It seems that, from the little bit that you've told me, definitely I would be thinking about dementia. And there is a condition in dogs they call cognitive dysfunction, or canine cognitive dysfunction, which I'm happy to call canine Alzheimer's, because it has very similar changes in the brain to human Alzheimer's, specifically the accumulation of amyloid plaques between brain cells that either are the cause, the effect of some sort of organic dysfunction. So it's not a will-of-the-wisp. It's not just getting old and losing the place. It's actually a disease. But there are lots of things you can do about it. So in the book, what you've told me sounds very highly suspicious, but in the book there's a chart, and you can go down the chart and you can check off in certain areas. One of them is disorientation. One of them is altered social interactions. One of them is sleep disturbances. One of them is house soiling, for no medical reason. And you don't have to have all of these things present. And it is true, a lot of these old dogs who have this problem, people think they're going deaf, but it's not that they can't hear. It's just that there's something happening inside their brain where they're not able to sort of listen and process the information. So when you treat the problem, sometimes people say, my dog can hear again. And it's because the brain's working better. So there's a couple of things you should know about. We go into more detail in the book. But one of them is a drug by the drug company Pfizer called Anapril. So Anapril by Pfizer Animal Health is it's a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. And what it does, it allows dopamine to build up in the brain. And one of the problems, one of the physiological problems, is that dopamine is not in enough supply, which means the dog's kind of slow mentally and physically. So restoring that can restore normal transmission. And sometimes the response to that medicine is truly dramatic, like, you know, my dog can hear again, and I got my puppy back and things like this. It's definitely worth a shot. The other thing is a diet put out by Hill's Pet Food called Hill's BD, where BD stands for brain diet. And that's full of antioxidants and things that are good for dogs who are going down as a result of this condition. And in the book, we mention various other things that you can use, supplements like acetyl coenzyme A is a very helpful thing, coenzyme Q10 plus acetyl L-carnitine, and various other things too. There's even human medicines that are used for Alzheimer's that can be used in the right hands by a vet who's prepared to use something extra label and explains it to you. We're allowed to prescribe human medicines such as Namenda or Aricept. So a number of things, from nutraceuticals, you know, for sleep disturbances, melatonin, an antioxidant. It goes into the whole gamut. And I think that you could have a wonderful 6 months or 9 months or 12 months more from your dog who's slipping before you even get to that question, is it time? But that question is also addressed in the book, too. And I would say, in terms of your dog, from this short telephone conversation, it's not time yet for you or your dog.
Let's talk about, and I guess we can do these simultaneously, the number of cutting-edge surgical techniques that are now available, the cataract surgery for dogs, the heart surgery. There are some very advanced medical procedures that weren't in existence a few years ago. And we also have to think about the expense of some of those, because, as you well know, these times are tough economically for a lot of people. How much can we afford?
Well, you know, it's the old saying is there's no such thing as cheap as expensive. There's good value and bad value. And it's a waste of money to take a dog who's on a hiding to nowhere, who's got some, you know, terrible malignant tumor, and throw all kinds of money at it just to make yourself feel better and have all sorts of tests and to drag it on, when you know that the ultimate is that, you know, a few months down the road, your dog's going to suffer and it's going to die, and then probably suffer on the route to dying. So that's wasted money. But on the other hand, there are things that can be very easily turned around, and we have lots of stories in the book that are stories of sort of hope and healing. You know, a man whose dog couldn't breathe and had a tube down its throat, and when we operated to fix its larynx, very common old dog condition, laryngeal paralysis, very common in Labradors. They have an altered bark and then difficulty in breathing. Just fixing the larynx, that dog was running around 2 years later and came in with a cut pad because it was having such fun on the side of a lake running around and accidentally stood in a piece of glass. So that was a good investment. It's good investments, bad investments. But there are expensive things that can be done, but they need to be done, you know, really thinking carefully about what you're going to find out, what you're going to learn, what can be done, factoring in family things, budgets, and so on. I wouldn't walk in and, you know, too many veterinary neurologists these days, at the drop of a hat, you say, I think my dog, you know, he's doing something, well, MRI, you know, and immediately we're in for, you know, $1,750,
right.
And then that's not counting the follow-up appointments and so on, and you haven't, all you've done is made a diagnosis, you haven't even got into treatment. So the question to ask is, if we find this thing that you're looking for, what can we do? You know, if you suspect it's a brain tumor, and they might say, well, you know, if it's a meningioma, we can operate. Or they might say, you know, and if it's a, you know, gliosarcoma, then we can't. So it's the end. So then you have a decision to make.
Right. Let's go to Pete from Reedfield. Hi, Pete.
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, Pete. Go ahead.
Excuse me? Go ahead.
You're on the air, sir.
Oh, I wanted to say I've got one comment and one question for Dr. Dobman. And I'm a little choked up here. I wasn't prepared to be speaking. But my comment is really directed at listeners like me, and I want to say support Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you.
My question for Dr. Dobman is I'm wondering whether we're focusing on the wrong issue regarding the mechanisms when we're treating obesity in dogs.
Well,
and I guess to continue, I guess what I'm thinking or what I wonder is that there's good data out there that shows that the current obesity epidemic is not only in people and their children, but also in any animal, including laboratory animals and feral rats, that share an environment with people. And I'm wondering if we're blaming the victim when our dogs get fat.
Well, we certainly wouldn't be blaming the dog, because the fact is an owner, you know, is in a position to feed exactly what the dog needs and no more, and they should be monitoring their dog's weight. So if you have a Labrador, it's not unreasonable that dog should weigh, you know, 70, 75 pounds. Maybe a big male might be 80 pounds or a little bit more. That's his fighting weight. If you feed him so much that he gets fat, that's the owner's fault. That's not the dog's fault. And although there is a drug to treat overweight dogs, it's called Slentrol. I always think of the word slender. Slentrol, made by Pfizer. I'm thinking, why would I give my dog a drug to make him eat less and lose weight when all I've got to do is feed him less? I mean, it's entirely my fault if my dog gets fat. And so in the book, to try and help people with that, because this is about dogs, not cats or rats, we have a chart that's put out by Nestle Purina. We reproduced it with permission. And it shows you, when you look at your dog from above and from the side, how what his body shape should be. You know, he should have something of a waist. You should be able to sort of see the indents of his ribs if it's a shortish-haired breed, and so on. You could look at these pictures and say, where is my dog on this picture? And if he scores, you know, towards the obese end of the spectrum, you better do something about it. And the way you do it is feed less. If you can't bring yourself to do that, there are a couple of really good diets, one by Hill's Pet Food again called Hill's RD, which is a high-fiber-reducing diet, so they can still eat a lot but not get fat. And there's one put out by Purina called Purina OM. OM stands for Overweight Management. But the owner, definitely, we're not blaming the dog for getting fat. We're blaming the very highly palatable foods that are around these days, both pet foods and human foods, that are there and delectable. And for human beings with no willpower, they're going to eat themselves and empty the fridge and end up saying, what can I do? I'm overweight. But for a dog, what the dog eats is entirely determined by the owner. And if you give him too much and he gets fat and he gets arthritis and dies early, you know, you cause these problems.
Yeah. More phone calls momentarily. We're speaking with the editor of Good Old Dog, expert advice for keeping your aging dog happy, healthy, and comfortable. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls. Pete, thank you very much for the call. And to Annie next in Janesville. Hi, Annie.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling. There was a caller earlier that talked about raw foods.
Mm-hmm.
And she was looking for something. And just through my experience, I wanted to give her a name of a book. Dr. Pekarin's.
What book is this?
Dr. Pekarin's Complete Guide to Natural Health for Dogs and Cats.
Uh-huh.
And I had a dog that had blood in his stools. That's how it all started. And he was put on medicine, and he ran out. So I just started with oatmeal for the weekend.
You know, I don't think our guest this hour is going to agree with this. Dr. Dodman?
No, I don't. And actually, I've raised these, this particular person's name, and there are a lot of people out there who are not nutritionists who are out there designing products that are based on their personal opinion and their beliefs and so on. There was even one book that made it to the New York Times bestseller list after the poisoning scare that happened, which affected like 17 dogs out of the nation's, 73 million. It was sort of blown out of proportion by the media, but there was some bad stuff came in from Japan. It was a contaminated batch or something, as happens with human food. But on account of that, this particular book, which is written by a newspaper reporter, it was like how to feed your dog real food, recipes approved by vets, and it's like beef and potatoes and carrots and rice, and they're out there, but I would say these books by these folk who are, I believe science. I'm a scientist, and I don't believe anybody who just puts a book together, especially with one person's name and especially with no qualifications. And I was told when I was at veterinary school by the late Professor Sir William Wipers, who was my mentor and the dean of the Glasgow Vet School, as he graduated our class, he said, as veterinarians, you have to learn to be somewhat humble, because the fact is that something like 19 out of 20 or more dogs and cats that are brought to you, you'll do something and they'll get better. And if you're a little immodest, you'll take credit for this amazing healing power that you have.
Mm.
You may be able to make a difference in 1 out of 20, but remember that that nature is healing a lot of these things, the body's processes, and you're just there to steer the ship and occasionally do something good. So don't get too cocky.
Yeah, give me just a couple. We have about a minute left here. What's with all this teeth business? When we were kids, we never used to brush our dog's teeth or get them cleaned. Is this important?
Yes, it is. And I was, a dinosaur from that age, too, because I graduated 41 years ago. And, vets in 1970, when I graduated, would go, what are you talking about, brushing a dog's teeth? Who cares? Dogs got older. And when they were about 10 years old, people say, boy, that dog's breath is like, whew, it really stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take him to the vet. They go to the vet. Vet puts him under anesthesia, does about 15 extractions, leaves him all gappy with about 3 or 4 clean teeth, and says, well, we had to take a lot out. Dog's gums are all infected and so on. So that's not a good way to go for people, for your kids or for your dogs. So if you do something in the way of prevention, and I agree, you can't brush every dog's teeth, or some would take your hand off.
Yes.
But if you can brush their teeth either with a toothbrush or a little ridged finger stall with some doggy-flavored toothpaste, because they don't like ours, that's ideal because it keeps down plaque. If you can't do that, you owe your dog regular veterinary visits for preventive dentistry, where they scale the teeth, just like we have done with ours, to keep them white and pearly, and then they'll flash you that bing, wonderful smile when they're 10. More importantly, it's not all about cosmetics. The mouth is the entrance to the body. If the mouth is infected, if the gums are inflamed and red, so-called periodontal disease, there's bacteria in there that will shower around your body. They can land in places you don't want them to land, like your heart, causing endocarditis, in your kidneys, causing nephritis. And you really don't want to have that entrance to your body in any bad shape. So,
all right.
Yeah, dental stuff's very important.
All right, you convinced me. Thank you so much. You were just a delight and so knowledgeable. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. having me on. I appreciate it.
The book is Good Old Dog, Expert Advice for Keeping Your Aging Dog Happy, Healthy, and Comfortable. Dr. Nicholas Dodman, veterinarian, was our guest, and he's with the School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University, where they see in their practice just yearly 8,000 old dogs. All right. All right. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and joining me in our studios is rock star producer Chrissy Pease, along with, well, Rhonda Fanning is sick today. She was to have been with us, but she'll join us someday this week. We hope that she gets better very soon. As a regular listener to this program, I think you can safely say that you know that you're always going to hear something worthwhile. And today we're asking you to put a value on this program. I've just learned something. I need to get my dog's teeth cleaned. I never thought that I would have to do that. He talked me into it. Well, and it didn't take much. Your gift is vital to WPR. It's really a big part of what keeps us going. Support this program and everything you hear on this station by making a gift in any amount, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And Kathleen, if I can recommend, I believe we use liver-flavored toothpaste for our Golden Doodle Bailey.
Liver. Okay.
Liver-flavored.
Thank you.
Much better than mint for her.
Okay.
And all our listeners, thank you so much for pledging. We are looking for 25 more pledges in the next 7 minutes or so. So thank you so much if you've already given. And if not, please help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation with veterinarian Nicholas Dodman about caring for your aging pets. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and many hours to come possible. And for a $150 pledge, you are going to receive this valuable book with a picture of what a beautiful dog on the front. I kiss you. Mwah! I love dogs. I just love dogs. They're better than we are sometimes. And put a value on the programs that you enjoy every day. Make your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you are able to decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Consider asking for this book, Good Old Dog, edited by our guest today, Nicholas Dodman, as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is having a drawing for a Kindle. Anyone who contributes today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 will be entered in the drawing. No contribution is necessary to win, and you can also enter by sending a postcard with your name, address, and phone number to WPR Kindle Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Postcards received by March 10th will be entered in the drawing. Employees of WPR and its affiliates and members of their immediate family and their households are not eligible. You must be a resident of the United States. The retail value of the Kindle is $189, as determined by the price listed by a major online retailer. The prize is not redeemable for cash, and any applicable income taxes are the responsibility of the winner. A winner will be selected in a random drawing on or about March 11th. Odds of winning depend on the number of eligible entries. The winner will be required to sign an affidavit of eligibility and release. Limit one entry per household. You can find all of these details at WPR.org.
I'm Kathleen Dunn. Chrissy Pease joining me in our studios, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe your gift, $50 or $100 or $150, and you love dogs and you want to keep your dog happy and alive for a long time, or $500 or $1,000, whatever amount you choose really is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledging at WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552 takes just a few minutes out of your day, and in return, you'll get back so many great programs. If you can, please consider a donation of $1,000.
Yeah, a $1,000 contribution makes a significant difference in our budget, and it helps us bring you the talk, the news, music, stories, and entertainment that you count on from WPR. Your donation of any amount will ensure that our community and our state will get the public radio that we deserve. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this hour, you can receive Good Old Dog, expert advice for keeping your aging dog happy, healthy, and comfortable when you make a contribution of $150. Your donation supports the programs you love, and you can get this nice thank you gift with your pledge of $150. So please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I almost brought my dog in today, but I didn't know if he'd get through security, and I didn't want to. I knew he had to pledge.
I don't know if Murphy could pass as a seeing eye dog. This is the federal building, and those are the only ones that seem to be allowed.
I know. So he's at home, but I'm missing him more and more after talking about this subject. At any rate, for you dog lovers, really, pledge this hour. We got a lot of dog lovers. I know that we do. You know, too many Abraham Lincoln and dog shows. I know. We haven't done an Abraham Lincoln show in how long? About time to do another
one. I'll get on that.
Thanks, Chrissy. Please pledge, and we'll send you this book for $150 pledge. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. We are looking for 22 more pledges. Chrissy, thanks for all of your hard work, as always. Rhonda Fanning, get better. Thank you for all of your hard work. And thanks to the audience, too, because you really are great. You're smart, and you're engaged, and everybody says that about you, so I don't know if you've heard it lately, but let me tell you now, so you'll hear it now. Thanks, everybody. We'll be with you tomorrow.